Welcome back to the clubhouse here in the McAdoo studios. Kyle Bailey, Will Stewart, Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com. Follow them on Twitter at Chris Coleman TSL and at Will Stewart TSL. Which quarterback do you think will play? Which quarterback would you prefer to play? And which quarterback, if it makes a difference at all with these current injuries, do you think gives Virginia Tech the better chance in this game right now? I'm inclined to believe it's Cardale Jones because he'll take so many shots down the field. And if he's taking shots down the field against inexperienced receivers and depending, relying upon them to go up and get jump balls or to make plays against Kendall Fuller and Brandon Faison, I'm inclined to believe Cardale Jones is actually a better matchup now.
So you're saying Jones is the one you would rather play against?
If you're Virginia Tech, I think so.
Not JT Barrett.
I personally, but I've always been high on JT Barrett. I think he's much more surgical, much more methodical, and I think he's the quarterback of the future for them. So I think as much as I like Cardale Jones' physical abilities, if I'm Virginia Tech, I'd rather face Cardale Jones.
Well, let me ask you a question. It goes back to the conversation we had before the break. And oh, by the way, sometimes the conversations during the break are the best ones.
We just can't air them.
You know, for a guy like me who doesn't know a lot about Ohio State, fill me in. How much experience does Cardale Jones have on the playing field? What year is he? How much experience does he have?
Three games. I mean, he's got some spot duty here and there, but nothing outside of those three games is at all meaningful.
All right, so we're talking about Bud Foster disguising coverages, making it look like he's going to do what he did last year, maybe doing an inverted zone. I have no idea what that is, but sounds tricky. and it sounds like you can make Cardale Jones.
Somebody text Bud and ask him what that means.
You can make Cardale Jones think you're doing one thing and do another, maybe easier than you can JT Barrett, although he's, you know, what's he got, 8, 9, 10 games under his belt?
Yeah, but I mean, he was really good. I mean, he set conference, you know, offensive records. He was very, very good.
And so my point is, whichever one you think you can fool better, you know, maybe is the one I want to play.
Well,
against.
I think that's it, and that's an excellent point. I think Cardale's that guy, and I said three games. There were three pretty damn big games.
Yeah.
Big Ten championship game, the semifinal, and the national championship. You know,
they were all neutral site games, but he's never played a road game.
No, and Ezekiel Elliott was the MVP of the national championship game, wasn't he?
Over 200 yards in all three of those games.
Right. So I mean, he was the. It's I don't know how, but with 200 yards in each game, he was kind of the unsung hero because the story was Cardale Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So I still think it's Cardale Jones personally. JT Barrett is a kid who I expect will just continue to get better, and I just wonder if Cardale Jones hasn't hit his ceiling. Again, pretty damn high ceiling, but I think he's probably hit it.
I mean, if we can trick them, for lack of a better word, into just throwing the ball deep all game like we did last year, I mean, that plays right into our strength. I mean, they had Zeke Elliott last year, and he had 8 carries against Virginia Tech. And we tricked them into just not giving him the ball and throwing it deep. At that point in the season, I don't think Urban Meyer realized how good Zeke Elliott was because he had only had 12 carries the previous week against Navy in a pretty close game.
That was a close game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I think he only had 7 carries the next week. It wasn't until the fourth game of the season until he had 20 carries and had his first 100-yard game. So Urban Meyer didn't know what he had in Zeke Elliott. And part of that was because, you know, Virginia Tech was lining up in that double eagle and matching up man coverage on the outside. So you're coming up to the line of scrimmage. You've got your check with me plays based on the alignment of the defense, and it's saying you need to take a shot downfield because their corners are on an island rather than handing the ball to your running back and running it into, you know, 7, 8 men right at the line of scrimmage. So we kind of our alignments force them to throw the ball deep quite a bit. I think they'll be a little more disciplined this year. I think Urban Meyer's going to find a way to get Ezekiel Elliott the ball 20 times no matter what formation Virginia Tech is in defensively.
We don't know Ohio State as well as we know Virginia Tech here, but for all the talk about JT Barrett being this green around the gills, inexperienced quarterback last year, that was why Ohio State lost. It was more about the offensive line.
Sure.
Matt Finks and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Finks was an All-American defensive lineman there and has done a lot of radio, doing TV up there now, and he drove that point home. He said it wasn't Barrett. It was the offensive line that really was the unit that killed them last year because they just weren't ready to play together.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that group got better as the year went along. And so you do start to wonder, you know, we talk about how great Virginia Tech's defensive front could be. Well, Ohio State's got one of the better offensive line groups returning in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so you talk about handing off the ball to Ezekiel Elliott. It does help that you got a bunch of inexperienced wide receivers out there going against a great secondary, but Maddie and Marshall and Ekinum and Nicholas still have a lot of work cut out for them.
Oh, they absolutely do. Ohio State's offensive line got a lot better throughout the season, and the fact that they were a bunch of new starters, it certainly hurt them in that second game. But We also beat them physically. I remember that one sack Daddy Nicholas had.
Daddy just knocked
where he just knocked the guard on the ground. Yeah, that doesn't have anything to do with playing well with the guy next to you. Uh-huh. That has something to do with you just getting knocked on your butt by a guy who weighs 230 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some of that involved, too. So that's going to be an awesome matchup, their offensive line versus our defensive line.
But also in the seven sacks, and I watched part of the game the other night. I watched, they replayed. They were showing all of Ohio State's games from last year, and I watched the Tech game, part of it anyway, late in the game. There were some sacks there where guys didn't get touched. Deion Clark didn't get touched. Kendall Fuller didn't get touched.
Yeah.
And that's offensive line execution. That's protections. And
Barrett
might have shared some of that responsibility for not recognizing what might – although corner blitzes are rare. Most quarterbacks aren't going to go up the line and think, oh, here comes Kendall Fuller. You know? So it's an intriguing matchup.
It really is. And what could be the most important of it all is how Andrew Matuapuaka responds back there at his brand.
If Ohio State gets Ezekiel Elliott through the line into the second level of the defense, then what does Matuapuaka do?
Right. Yeah. That's it. You've talked about this a lot, Chris. He has got to be the guy who out there recognizes and knows what he's seeing, can make the proper calls and be in the right place, because physically he can make all the plays.
Sure.
It's whether or not he's in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's tough on a young player, particularly a young player who's responsible for calling out the defensive play, making sure everybody in the front seven's aligned correctly. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to process in your head for a young player. That's why we've talked about it before. I don't remember the last true freshman Mike linebacker to play it for Virginia Tech. Well, you know, Matuapuaka was a redshirt freshman last year, pressed into action. That's still very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot to ask. It's a lot to put on his plate, but he's got to respond.
And you're one turned knee away from actually going to a true freshman.
Oh, yeah.
You're one turned knee away from saying, Carson Lydon, that's your job.
They're saying they're going to redshirt him now.
But then where do they turn?
Hulskamp.
Well, and that's – Bud did talk about Sean Hulskamp.
I like him, but he's coming off that torn ACL.
Right.
So how much can you really depend on him?
And he weighs, what, 207?
Something like that, yeah.
He's not a big guy. No. I saw him the other day. He's not a big guy. He Zeke Elliott's bigger.
Oh, sure.
You know,
easily.
By a lot.
But if Hulskamp is a Jack Tyler-style tackler, I mean, Jack was – boy, he could tackle you.
Right.
You know, he had great form and positioning and all that stuff. You know, I'm not going to pretend I want to play – every single week with a 207-pound middle linebacker, but you know, we'll see.
On the one hand, you understand why fans can be a little bit frustrated with recruiting. You know, is that you know, and I'm not trying to twist the knife here, because they look really good defensively, but you're just one sprained ankle, one turned knee, you know, one getting his bell rung away from saying, like Will just said, here, our 207-pound former walk-on, or is he still a walk-on? Do I even know at this point?
I think he's still a walk-on.
Still a walk-on middle linebacker. You know, it's your job.
I mean,
have at it.
We're really hanging. We could be really good this year. We could also go 6-6 again.
Right.
You know, we're hanging on by to a thin line there because of the lack of depth. So if we have wide receivers injured, we have an offensive lineman injured, if we have a Mike injured, then we're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But if those guys stay healthy, we can be really good.
Sounds about like USC, honestly, and a lot of other teams in the country, quite frankly. There are a lot of teams out there. Outside of the top, I'd say outside of the annual top 10 recruiting team ranking regulars, mm-hmm. most every other team in the country is like that. You know,
yeah.
they can't afford to lose you know, more than a couple of starters, you know, and otherwise their season's in the toilet.
Especially on the offensive line.
Yeah.
That's the team where more schools than not have trouble keeping good depth.
I watched Joshua Nijman on Saturday. I think both of you were there on Saturday
mm-hmm.
with Wade Hansen still in the boot. I was watching him pretty closely, and I thought he played pretty well.
He's really made a lot of progress. And I asked Scott Loeffler Monday. I think Scott met with the media, and I wanted to ask him about that. And I said, you know, during that scrimmage, you had several very well-blocked runs to Nijman's side. Runs that went for long gains and great big holes. And I said, was that Nijman? Was that the guys around him? You know, and then Scott said, well, it takes 11 guys to execute a football play. You know, he did well, and the other 10 hats did well too. So, you know, Nijman made his mistakes, and he still only weighs about 272,
That's what I was going to say. He started camp at about 280,
He told us last week that he was 280.
Right.
With a guy his height, I bet that 8 pounds could fluctuate either way each day.
Well, sure, he probably drops to 272 after practice.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
But I get a couple meals on him, and he's 280 at the beginning of the next practice.
Exactly.
He's got such a great frame. You know, you look at him, and you see an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
you know, a couple years in the weight room, and that guy's going to be big time.
Oh, he's got that Dwayne Brown frame.
Yep.
Is what he's got.
Yeah, well, I looked at him and thought, there's Dwayne Brown a little bit skinnier.
Yeah, he's got the Dwayne, but and he's got the great hands too. I mean, a couple of times I watched him go up against Daddy Nicholas and even Ken Kanem, I believe, one time, and he doesn't lose the hand fights.
No, you know? No, no, he's got big hands. You look at this guy's hands, and you're like, man, those hands are huge. It's like, is he going to be the next Jarrett Boykin? They're going to be talking about him on the sideline. Look at this guy's triple X gloves.
Yeah, look at the size of his gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's ever heard this story before. What a neat anecdote for a national broadcast.
Yeah, instead of breaking down the game, let's talk about his gloves. But anyway, yeah, he's got great hands. He's got a good attitude, too. He's got a lot of fight. He works hard. I think he's got a lot of pride in his game. Definitely going to play this year. Wouldn't shock me if he ended up being a three-year starter.
No. Not at all. And I guess it was Parker Osterloh is the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be those two where if someone goes down, someone needs a playoff, someone needs a blow for whatever reason, those guys are the ones that are going to the game. If you can run, I mean, you got seven, you're okay. You're in decent shape, I guess.
Well, the thing is, and you've got Nijman, who's definitely a tackle, and you have your swing guy who could play guard or tackle.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't know is, do you have a backup center?
Mm-hmm.
Because Chung has been hurt so much.
But I thought Chung did all right Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't get to look at. We got to look at Tyrell Smith, and we got to look at Chung, and I thought Chung looked better.
Oh, definitely. Tyrell Smith still can't snap the ball.
Yeah, because that's it. I mean, he still can't snap the football. He's not ready for that.
If you got problems at center, I think Chung's your guy.
It has to be. Yeah, there's really no other option.
You talked about Nijman a second ago. We'll carry this into the next segment, but you talked about his good attitude. Another kid who I think has a tremendous attitude is Ricky Walker, who was asked about redshirting, and you know, he gave the right answer, I guess. I doubt he was coached on it. It seemed genuine. This kid just said, look, I'll do what's best for the team. If it's best for my long-term development, you know, Steve Sobchak's the fifth defensive tackle right now, and I think justifiably so. That kid lived in the backfield on Saturday.
He did, and he lived in the backfield in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding Ricky Walker's attitude, I couldn't agree with you more. He mentioned the academics. He's saying, look, this gives me a much better chance to get my degree or maybe even a master's degree,
mm-hmm.
you know, being here 5 years. So, you know, I think it's a good answer. I've always thought he had a good head on his shoulders. It's not the first time Virginia Tech has redshirted a true sophomore defensive lineman. They did it with Kevin Lewis back in 2001. I remember he played as a true freshman in 2000, but then they were so deep a defensive tackle in 2001 that they decided to go ahead and redshirt him, and then he had a really good career, was a senior on that defensive line in 2004. So if they hadn't redshirted him, gosh, him and Jim Davis – both played as true freshmen. They ended up redshirting those guys later in their careers. Lewis,
got to play on the 2014.
Yeah.
Right, they got to play on the 2014. Those guys hadn't redshirted because of depth. When Lewis was a true sophomore and then Jim Davis hurting his shoulder, then that team would have been without two studs at defensive tackle and might not have won the ACC because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Davis tore his pec.
Playing golf.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Big men like that have no business swinging golf.
That sounds painful. It's like me tearing a pec because I'm swinging a toothpick.
Oh, man. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back one more segment with Chris Coleman and Will Stewart of TechSideline.com. Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.